be final entity in Carolina in the morning.
In Carolina.
No one would be sweeter than McCready when I meet her in the morning.
The morning.
With the morning.
The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Joe Simpson from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Triangle Yesteryear. On this program, you'll hear reminiscences of life in earlier times around North Carolina's Triangle area, written by local authors. On today's program, we'll be taking a trip down to the coast for our Down East listeners. I'll be reading chapters from Portsmouth Island, Memories of Nina Mann Dixon, edited by James Edward White III. Forward. One of my earliest memories is of Aunt Nina Dixon telling stories of Portsmouth Island on the Outer Banks of North Carolina. She was a natural and gifted storyteller, and could keep one entertained for hours telling stories of the war between the states, the War of 1812, blockade runners, pirates, colonial governors, sailboats, and adventures on an island paradise that seemed so far away. I was enthralled and looked forward to her coming for a visit and hungered for her stories. Because of her and my grandmother Lucy, who was also a great storyteller, I developed a love of history and a greater love of Portsmouth Island. After graduating from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill and majoring in American history, I returned to Pamlico County, where I began teaching history. Shortly thereafter, I began recording Aunt Nina, making a number of tapes of her stories of the Civil War and life on Portsmouth Island during the late 19th century. In addition, she told about living in New Bern in the 1880s and Pamlico County in the first decade of the 20th century. This book is a compilation of those tapes, put into narrative form as she told them. They are taken verbatim from the three or four tape recordings I made in the 1970s with Aunt Nina at her home in Oriental. I hope you enjoy them now as much as I did then. Jim White. Dedication. For those of us who remember and loved Aunt Nina, and for those who may get a brief glimpse of her through these pages, may you keep her love of Portsmouth and her memory alive. As Aunt Nina told it, my parents moved to New Bern after getting married. Papa was running back and forth on the train from Moorhead City to New Bern. They lived in what they called a cottage room. That is where the ice plant is. That was called the cottage room. When I was born, Mama was living in New Bern. When she was expecting me, she left New Bern and went to Portsmouth. Her neighbors all said, "What in the world are you doing going to Portsmouth Island? There's not a doctor in the world there." She said, "I'd rather be there with my mama than all the doctors in New Bern." So that is why I was born in Portsmouth. It was 3 months before Papa ever saw me. People didn't get about then like they do now, you know. Anyway, she had to hire somebody to take her to Portsmouth because they were sailboats, you know. Going down, they met a yacht, and her name was the Nina. So this man said, "If I didn't have you, I could make $5 piloting that man through Core Sound." And she said, "Well, I don't mind." They went up alongside the yacht, and they said, "Bring the lady aboard." Mama said they had a picture of the yacht in it, in what they called the saloon. It was such a pretty boat. It was the prettiest boat that she had ever seen. She said, "If my baby is a girl, I'm going to name her Nina." So I was named after a boat. But anyhow, that is how I got my name and why I was born down there. Of course, she took me back to New Bern in January. I was 12 years old when we went to Portsmouth to live. My father was named Asa Mann, and he was born March 13, 1847, and he died January 10, 1933. My mother was Matilda Ireland, who was born December 1, 1846 at Portsmouth, and she died October 21, 1910. Will's grandfather was named William Dixon, and his grandmother was named Ann Dixon. The old man, whose name was William, married twice. Well, the first time he married a girl on Ocracoke. Her name was Anne. She was Will's father's mother, my husband's grandmother. Well, Anne died, and then he married my mother's sister. They had 10 children. His other grandfather was named William Salter, who was born in 1819 and died in 1877. His grandmother was Polly Salter, and she was born in 1823 and died in 1881. My grandfather was Thomas Mann, and his wife was Elizabeth. My other grandfather was Earls Ireland of Portsmouth Island, and he was born in 1801 and died in 1877. His wife was Matilda Roberts, and she was born in 1802 and died in 1887. I have one son named Roy, and he married Chris Arnold. He was born on April 12, 1905, and they have one son named Tommy. I have one grandson, also named Tommy, but we call him Buddy. Grandmama had five brothers, one named Jack, one named Joe. Joe Roberts over here was Mama's uncle. Uncle Jack went down to Smyrna. It was right funny, and two of them went west. People talked about going to Texas. It was such a new country. So two of my grandmother's brothers went to Texas. One of them was named Bartholomew. So my grandfather, the way they traveled then, they had prairie schooners. He bought a prairie schooner and was going to take his family to Texas. But one of my aunts was taken ill, and the way they described it, it must have been typhoid fever, for she was down for months. So my grandfather gave up the idea of going to Texas. Then, when we lived on the island, I was about 12 years old, this man came on Portsmouth Island and searched the graveyards. Well, Portsmouth Island is low, and my ancestors are buried on Cedar Island. He searched the tombstones down there. It's right funny, he called himself Texas Randall. He had long hair and looked like a cowboy. So anyway, one of my grandmother's sisters was still living, Aunt Patsy, on the island, and he went and talked to her. So he had all the Roberts, because they were Roberts, he had all the family get together, and he was going to read the will of Bartholomew Roberts, who went to Texas all those years ago. It is said he left a fortune, and he said that Bartholomew Roberts was his great-grandfather. So he was getting all the Roberts generations together and to read the will. Some of the Roberts were living in New Bern, Daniel and Steve Roberts, and some of the older family. And he was going to find out who they all were. And he was going to go back and collect the money. And they all thought they were going to get rich. They claimed he was kidnapped by Indians and raised an Indian after his great-grandfather died. He came to our house one night and cooked up something that would cure anything you had. I never tried it. Anyway, he got all the records straight, searched the graveyards, and those who were living told them what they knew. He married a girl on Hatteras. So they left, and they were going to Texas. A young man went with them, Worthy Mason. So they left in this boat, so Worthy and this girl went with them. When they got to Norfolk, he deserted them, and they never saw him or heard of him since. He could have gotten killed or could have gone and collected the money himself. But he was an educated man and could do the prettiest handwork you ever seen. He had a painting class. He painted ships and icebergs. We were meeting at the Styron home one night, and he asked Mrs. Styron for some writing paper, and he was talking and cutting all the while. And when he opened it up, it was the most beautiful thing I ever did see.
Now I said, honey, hush, do come down in and make an old fuss. Come right down and open the door and let me in and say no more. Who's that knocking at the door? That you found more. No, it is Jim, you ain't good at the pin and you can't come in. No, you're knocking at the door anymore, so no, you're knocking at the door.
My grandfather was Earls Ireland, and he had slaves on Portsmouth Island. I guess they all slept up there together, above the kitchen at grandfather's house. Oh, there were more than six or seven. Grandmother had a loom, and she used to weave, and she used to make their clothes. I don't know what grandfather wanted slaves for. They had no land to tend. I guess for investment. I don't know what else. During the Civil War, grandfather saw this gunboat coming in at Portsmouth, and he knew it was the Yankees coming in. He had all his money in money bags, so he said to Mama, "Matilda, do something with my money. Take your brother's picture and hide it, because that's who they're looking for." Mama said she didn't know what to do with it, but there was a long porch in front of the house, and it was 3 feet off the ground. There were four or five bags of money, and it was gold, too. In front of that porch, they had to take care of water themselves, so they had hogsheads to catch water, you know. She said that is just where she would put it. She got down there and threw it down there in those hogsheads, you know. The letters, she tied them up in her petticoats. Well, said the captain of the ship that came in, are you Captain Ireland? And Grandfather said, I am. Do you have a son that captains Dixie? Yes. Mama said, well, what in the world are you telling all that for? The Yankee said, well, we're going to search the place. Grandfather said, well, help yourself. The slaves had already gone down in the woods. They searched around, and they didn't find nothing, so they left. Mama said they'd drink all the liquor that was in the smokehouse. Papa said, Matilda, where did you put the money? Out there in the hogsheads. Why, he said, they could see it there. But they didn't even bother it. It was so obvious. They didn't think that was anything. They didn't even bother to look in there. While they were going through the house, they turned everything upside down looking for papers and documents dealing with my Uncle David Ireland, who was a blockade runner. Said after the Yankees came in, they asked my grandfather, where is your son? Grandpapa wouldn't tell a lie, but he said, I couldn't tell you where he is because I don't know, but he's a blockade runner. And the Yankee captain looked around. He was a Mason, that army man, and so was my grandfather. So he said, let's go, and he didn't do a thing to the place. Everywhere else, they stole the meat and emptied the milk out and everything. Uncle David's wife stayed on the island during the war. Mama used to stay there with her because the Yankees were always coming in searching and trying to find Uncle Dave. Well, one of his ships had been captured, but he got the flag, the stars and bars, and his wife had put it under the bed. Mama said the Yankees had come in that night. They were searching, and they turned the bed up, and they found it, the flag, you know. They pulled it out. They said, how about that thing? Mama said, that's the prettiest flag that ever flew, and I long to see the time I can wave it over your head on behalf of Jeff Davis. Mama said that the old man said, you have said enough to put you behind bars. Mama then said, I'll be glad to go there for Jeff Davis. I'll gladly do that for Jeff Davis. Mama never did like the Yankees. When we came to Oriental, the Beechams moved there from New York. Mama said, it makes me sick to my stomach to see how Southern people can look like they idealize old Yankees, and said, I don't got no more use for them now than I did during the war. I tell you, they were persecuted, all right. I think it is well for our country to be united. That was my Uncle David running the blockade from the West Indies to Wilmington, bringing supplies to the Confederate Army during the war between the states. He was Mama's oldest brother. He was captured by the Yankees I don't know how many times. You see, my grandfather Ireland came from New York, and the men who captured Uncle Dave were some of his friends. During the war, my grandfather had slaves, and he took the slaves and come over here to Jones Bay, now they call it Hoboken, and my grandfather would take some of his girls to cook for them. Well, Rose had a family of children. Leah was her daughter, and she had a family. They moved out, and they got homes on the island, old homes that were deserted. Oft times, Mama would say, Rose, I want you to go down there and get me a quart of oysters. She would wade out there to that big oyster rock and bring her a quart of oysters. Mama would give her 10 cents for that quart. I paid $2.85 a pint for them the other day. In my childhood, when I was being raised in New Bern, they didn't have electric lights. They had gas lights on the corners. I saw the electric lights turned on in New Bern. Every year they used to have a fair, New Bern did, and Papa was on the police force. So he said to Mama, come out to the fairgrounds tonight, and the city's going to turn on the electricity. We had never seen electric lights, you know. I reckon I was about 6 years old, as I remember. We went out there, and sure enough, they turned on the electric lights. The man who had the power plant was a man named Ellis Williams. I will never forget them. That was such an unusual thing. They were such a pretty thing. So I remember that. Something else. The streets were not paved in New Bern. Down Middle Street, by Cress, about 2 blocks, there were brick pavement about 4 feet wide, and the center of the street was not paved at all. It was the muddiest place you know to go down the street. And something else I saw. I went to where the courthouse is. I saw them lay the cornerstone for the courthouse, where it is now. Not many people can say that they saw that today. Cleveland was the first president I remember. You know, he ran for one term, and then he was defeated for re-election. We were living in New Bern at that time. The Republicans had a big celebration because he lost the election. We were living in a house that had an upper porch, and Mama and I were up there. They carried Cleveland by in a casket, you know. Papa said, "Maddie, you and Nina come in off that porch. I don't want nobody to see you out on that porch looking at that Republican parade." But we wanted to see what was going on.
In the good old summer time, in the good old summer time, strolling through the shady lane with your baby mine. You hold her hand and she holds yours, and that's a very good sign.
The types of toys I had as a child were, well, they were beautiful dolls. I had a bisque doll. You could move their joints. I had a cradle with a baby in there, you know. Mama and Papa always bought me everything they thought I would want or need, and I had all that doll furniture. When we left the island after the hurricane of 99, I said, "Mama, what in the world am I going to do with all these things?" She said, "Nina, you are not going to carry all that mess to Bellhaven." "What am I going to do with it?" "Well, give it to somebody." Well, there was this colored girl on the island named Lizzie, who was one of the descendants of one of my grandfather's slaves. So I got in touch with Lizzie and said, "Lizzie, do you want my cradle and baby?" She said, "Yes, Miss Nina, I sure do." So she came around, and I gave her all my toys. In my childhood, there were over 300 people on Portsmouth Island. What they called the island was divided into three sections. The southern end was called Sheep Island. The middle section was called Up the Banks, or Middle Community, and the northern end was called Down the Banks. I lived in my grandmother's home in the northern end of the island, or Down the Banks. The southern end was called Sheep Island. The Gilgos, they lived up the banks, and the Salters, they lived on Sheep Island. The Dixons all lived down the banks. We had five stores at various times I was there. Well, down the banks where we lived, Mr. Bill Williams had a store right near us. Joe Dixon had one up the banks. Over on the creek side, a man named Alex Robinson had a store. Up the banks, there was a Gilgo. Warren Gilgo had a store. I don't think there was one on Sheep Island, but there was three stores. You could buy anything you wanted. There were five stores on the island at one time when we lived there. You could buy anything you wanted. Your living costs weren't too much. We didn't have refrigeration to keep things cool. In my childhood, we had a porch. We had a high shelf out on the long porch that went across the front of the house, and Mama put her butter and milk up on that shelf. You know, flies didn't bother things. I don't know why, but when they put them up there. We always had cows, and we had plenty of milk and cream and stuff like that. One thing on the island, you could buy anything you wanted from the store, and you could go to New Bern in Washington to get the other things. As for the churches on the island, there wasn't nothing but the Methodists there on the island. The Primitive Baptist later built a church on the island. It wasn't too long before the hurricane came in 1899. They would have preaching. My grandmother was a Primitive Baptist. They used to meet in my grandmother's living room. She had planks that they made seats. I can remember as a child, they would make seats. And this preacher, and by the way, it was Irma Midget's grandfather, John Rowe. I knew Irma Midget's grandmother. Her name was Lucy, and they come from up here. Well, Mr. John Rowe used to preach down at Portsmouth. At that church, we always had a Christmas tree. Down there, everybody always carried the Christmas gifts to the church and gave the gifts at the church. We'd have a program, and the only decorations we had, we would have yaupon berries, branches of that, and use that for decoration, and cut down a cedar or something like that. And we used to get the little candles and fasten them on the tree. And one time, Santa Claus got a fire. He was taking them off the tree, you know. On his sleeve, he caught fire. It caused quite a commotion. We would sing Christmas songs. I don't know who was in charge of lighting the candles and of the program. I remember there was a speech that I taught one of the girls for the program. Pauline was her name. "I want to tell you right away what Santa Claus brought me. Last night when I was fast asleep and couldn't hear or see, he brought a dolly. Oh, so big, it filled my stocking full. When I went to get it out, it gave me a thrill. I love my mama very much. I love my papa, too. I love you all for listening to this speech that I brought to you." We had one Methodist preacher, and he died. He came over and he preached that night on Saturday night. He lived on Ocracoke. My girlfriend and I, we went to home with a cousin, and the next morning, the first thing we heard was that he had died. We had a potato house. Papa would make this house and take some planks, you know, and made it up like this, and cut turf and put the turf up over it like this, and have a door. It was covered all over with dirt. All over it, and then have a door. We raised a lot of potatoes, and the best sweet potatoes. They were Hayman's white potatoes. I never saw a yam until I came on this side. that's the mainland, we would harvest 100 bushels of potatoes. Anything you would plant on that island would grow, and you didn't have to have any fertilizer. The soil must be good. And Portsmouth Island is only part of the banks that I know is grassy. Ocracoke is sandy, and Hatteras and all them is sandy. It looks like it used to. Looks like it is mowed. The cattle and sheep kept it mowed down. Well, they had live ducks and geese there for hunting as decoys. It wasn't against the law back then to use live decoys for hunting then. My goodness, I've seen Mr. Saul Dixon and his boys go out and come back with a skiff load of geese. They had what they called batteries. They would make something that a man could lie down in, and the fowl would get used to it. The fowl would be coming, and the man would get down in that battery, you know, and the ducks would be all around, the decoys and the ducks. He would get up and shoot them. He'd kill them. They also had what you call blinds, which was a big box that would sit up on spokes and that was covered with bushes. People would go out there until the ducks or geese would come. Then, when they would come, they would shoot them. People had live decoys then. They had live geese and ducks that they would use for decoys. Just as soon as the decoys would see the wild geese and ducks coming, they would honk, honk, and they'd come to them. They also had wooden ones, but after a while, they outlawed the live decoys because the fowl was getting too scarce. One time, it was a very cold winter. Papa and a cousin of mine, they had gone out there to Royal Shoals. That was a big oyster rock out there, to oyster. They came on this big freeze, and they couldn't get in. The creeks were frozen over. And so they were out there almost a week. Mama was afraid they didn't have enough to eat, because they didn't intend to stay out there when they went out. They were going out there to catch some oysters on Royal Shoals, the big oyster rock, and it made mighty nice oysters. Well, after a while, they finally got in. Our coal gave out, and Mama didn't know what to do. There was an old Dixon man up there, and Mama went up to see him. She said, "I've not got any coal, and I wonder if you could come and cut some wood." So he came and cut down one of those cedar trees, because we had a fireplace and we could burn it until Papa could get in. Coal and everything came from New Bern, but we made out with the wood. We had a daily mail from Beaufort by boat. If there's any mail for the island, the mailman would carry it up to the post office. Then he would go to Ocracoke, and of course he would pick up any mail that was going out. So that was the way the mail was brought. Well, this family of Wallaces came from England. They built what they called the castle. My aunt told me about this. My aunt Love told me this story. It was built right there on the end of the island. It had warehouses built there, so that when ships would come in Ocracoke Inlet, they would unload their supplies at this castle. The lighters, the smaller boats, would take it up to New Bern and Washington and different parts of the state. He had warehouses there, and when the ships would come in with produce, they would put it in their warehouses. People on the Neuse, Pamlico, and Tar Rivers would come down there and transfer the goods to New Bern and Washington. He and his wife are buried up on the island, up at Sheep Island. The channel, out there from Portsmouth, is named for him, Wallace Channel. I said, of course, it happened way before my time, but Aunt Love had told it to me. There's a marble slab on that grave there, and the epitaph is written there in Old English. The houses didn't have all the comforts we have today. In my time, we used coal. Of course, we had a fireplace we could use if it got very cold. There was a fireplace in my grandmother's house. In the kitchen, there was a fireplace there, and there was a thing in the chimney where you could hang a pot on. Or you could bake your bread. They were the best biscuits. She had a spider with legs on them where you could bake the biscuits. You would put the coals under them and bake the biscuits in them. I used to get up mornings, and Mama would make up biscuits and bake them in that pan. I used to love to go to Portsmouth and eat them hot biscuits. We had a cistern to collect water to drink. Ours was at Grandmother's home. It was probably about 8 feet square and about 6 or 7 feet deep. It had gutters around the house, and in the summer the water would get it full when the rains came. The summer we would only get light showers. We always had plenty of water. About half of it was above ground. After that storm of 99, Papa bailed it out because it was all filled with salt spray. Our cistern had a wooden top, but of course it went away. Papa took our cattle and things to sell to New Bern. When he was gone, Mama said, "Go and get a bucket of water." There was an old cat drowned in it. And I said, "Mama, there's an old cat in there." And she wouldn't drink none of that water. We had a pump that Papa used to water the cattle and pigs and things. It was brackish, and you could never get good water with that. Papa said, "If I'd been home, I would have thrown that cat out, and you would never have known that cat had been in there."
I'll be your little honey, I will promise that. Said Nellie as she rolled her dreamy eyes. It's a shame to take the money, said the bird on Nellie's hat. Last night she said the same to Johnny Wise. Then to Nellie, Willie whispered as they fondly kissed, I'll bet that you will never kiss like that.
There were lots of sheep. They had sheep penning in May, I believe it was. They would shear the sheep, and the older women would card the wool, make rolls, spin it, and make thread. Mama's sister had a spinning wheel, and she would spin that thread any size she'd wanted. Grandmother had a linen wheel, and I don't know where she got the flax. I don't know if they raised it or how. She used to make my grandfather's clothes. He used to run from New York to the West Indies. So when he gets out, she had these suits that she had made him out of linen that he could put them on. She had this loom up there in the attic. I've worn some of these petticoats, some of the flannel petticoats that they made, but I never saw her make that. I have seen her make carpets on this big loom. Miss Emmeline Gilgo, Tom Gilgo's mother, she would come down there and put it in. You had to have the warp and the wool, too. You had a shuttle to go back and forth. It was tedious work, but they got by with it. We had all the pony penning, the 10th of May. You could always look for some rainy showers for that pony penning along in May. There was two lighthouses out on the islands, Southwest Point, about 5 miles out there, and the Northwest Point, about 2 miles out there. They were built on iron posts out in the water. The house was built on top of them. Families lived on them who took care of the lighthouses. Two families were keelers. They were brothers. They were both Yankees. They were here during the Civil War. So they liked the South because it was not as cold as the North. They both married down here. Both married, and Miss Annie was a McCotter from this county, Pamlico, which was Craven at that time, and Miss Dina, sister to Miss Annie, married Mr. Ed Keeler. Miss Annie and Mr. Charlie didn't have any children, but Miss Dina and her husband had one girl. Her name is Iola. So after I came to Oriental, Charlie and Anna Keeler moved to Oriental. For recreation, we played croquet. In the winter, we had candy parties. The boys would buy the sugar, and we would make taffy. We would get together a whole crowd of boys and girls. We would dance the Virginia reel. There was a lot of young people on the island when I grew up there. There were 300 or 400 people, but they all moved away. In the fall of the year, we would have what we called a nor'easter. My mother said she'd never seen the water in her mother's house, so that must have been a terrible time, that 99. When Papa told her to take the carpet up, she said, I'm not going to do it. I've never seen the water in my mother's house in all my life. Well, it looks like it's going to come in on this one. Because he saw it was going to come in, and indeed it did come in. The water came in and covered the bottoms of the chairs sitting on the floor. It was that deep in the house. I can remember the Spanish-American War. Mama had a little knapsack already packed. One day, we heard guns, and everybody knew they were coming. But it was just some target practicing. It didn't amount to very much. That is when Roosevelt got into that. We've run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Yesteryear. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Joe Simpson, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Following the broadcast, this episode is readily available as a podcast at our website, triangleReadingService.org. So long until next time. If you have any comment or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138.